I'm Steve Wolf, stunt and special effects coordinator, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Saturday morning. You know, the Oscar nominations were announced just a couple of days ago. So in honor of that, I thought we'd do a bit of movie talk here in the neighborhood, because we do so much about the theater, so we kind of give movies a little bit of short shrift, even though I love them almost as much as I love theatrical productions. So I thought it would be really, really fun to talk to a guy who was involved in movies in a wild, fun, crazy, sort of scary, but also very intelligent, sophisticated, and scientific kind of a way. His name is Steve Wolf, and for many years he's been a stunt coordinator and special effects coordinator for film and television, such films as Castaway and Columbiana and The People vs. Larry Flint, and a couple of John Grisham-related movies, also Law and Order and Rescue 911. So there's all that stuff to talk about, plus the way Steve Wolf has also been using all that experience and scientific knowledge to impart that to school kids, because he goes around the country teaching them science principles using his background in the movies. So what better way to celebrate the Oscar announcements than by talking with the one and only Steve Wolf. Steve, welcome to the neighborhood.
And the envelope, please.
The envelope goes to you, Mr. Wolf. What was your first...
Thank you so much for having me here, Dave.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. I'm excited about this. And I should mention right off the bat that you have even a book about what you do called The Secret Science Behind Movie Stunts and Special Effects, which is put out by Saddleback Books. So just tell me, like, that very first movie or TV show that you got, that you worked on. I'm sure it was as an assistant to the assistant special effects director, but how did it go?
Well, actually, the first movie was a movie called The Firm, with this very old actor named Tom Cruise, or anybody remember him?
Yeah, I think he changed his name from Cruisewitz or something.
That's right.
Yeah. But that was the first...
in the old country.
Yeah. But that was the first film you worked on?
That was the first one that I was the special effects coordinator on. Prior to that, I had done a lot of assistanting, as you say. I worked under a special effects coordinator named Gary Zeller. And I had worked as a set medic, patching up stunt people who hadn't applied a sufficient degree of science to their stunts. And after seeing stunt people getting hurt countless times in what looked to be needless ways, I thought, you know, let's put some physics in here. Let's put some chemistry in here.
So as in terms of
not a necessary part of this.
But in terms of being a stunt medic, as it were, you weren't tending to them, the people, as a doctor. You were tending to the stuff that they were doing, and you would make it better and safer. Or were you actually physically, like, you know, healing burns and bones and stuff?
Well, as a stunt medic, you're there to try and patch the stunt people back up when they get hurt and transport them to the hospital.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. So it really is human stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So there's, you know, there was, and to some degree still is, you know, a possibility that people could get hurt when they're doing stunts. Because stuntness used to be somewhat akin to daredevilry. You set up something dangerous and you hoped it went right, but you weren't really sure. And so it was always nice to have an ambulance standing by.
Yeah.
But right now it's really much more of a science. And in science, you have an anticipated outcome, and based on following the same procedures, you expect to continue to get the same results. So we know pretty much what's going to happen now. We plan these things out. We use computers to help in the planning, and we use physics, and we use chemistry, and we use geometry to figure out what's going to happen.
I mean, stuff can still go wrong. The wind can blow in a different way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
right, the check could bounce.
Oh, that's the worst of all. So besides a check bouncing, what's the worst accident you've ever, like, witnessed?
Oh, no, actually, it was the check bouncing.
All right, what's the second worst?
a motorcycle stunt where they had angled the ramp towards a window. So the motorcycle is supposed to go up the ramp and then come through the window of a building. And they had angled the ramp straight shooting at the window, not taking into account gravity and the fact that we travel in a parabola rather than a straight line. And I looked at it, and I went and told the stunt coordinator, this doesn't look right, I think someone's going to get hurt here. And he turned around on me like in a classic Clint Eastwood, and he said, well, let's agree on a division of labor here. You drive the ambulance, and I'll set up the stunts.
Oh, boy.
So I said, all right, well, some people are just too smart to learn. And 10 minutes later, we were taking the guy to the hospital with broken knees.
Oh, so what happened was he went higher than the window should have
went
been.
Lower.
Or lower, right. The window would have been there, but he would have curved downward.
Right, he curved downward, so he caught the windowsill with his knees.
Oh, lordy.
When I got back to the set, I pulled the director aside, and I said, you know, I'm pretty sure that I could set these stunts up for you without anybody getting hurt, and I could lower your liability, and that would lower your insurance expenses. And when you're talking to producers and directors, you know, anything that lowers expenses is good news. So they gave me a shot at it, and that's really how it started.
Well, that's a pretty high-level shot, was working on the firm. And so what are some of the kinds of stunts that you personally have coordinated for, I wish I could do stunts for my lips and my tongue here, for major motion pictures or for television?
I've done car stunts, I've flipped cars, I've crashed cars, I've thrown people off roofs, I've blown up buildings.
Yes, but what have you done for the movies? No, just kidding.
Right. Well, what's the difference between an arsonist and a pyrotechnician? Is the presence of a camera.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, I try to always make sure there's a camera there, or else I'm just having fun.
Well, one thing that people might not like, I was flipping through your book, Movie Stunts and Special Effects, and when you burn down a building, it's not like you're just finding an abandoned building to burn down. I mean, that's just basically
that's the ideal, of course, if you can find an abandoned burning building and really burn it down. And I've done that for America's Most Wanted on occasion.
Really?
That's the least expensive thing to do. Is you find a building, a barn that the farmer wants to get rid of, it's or a building that's scheduled for demolition, and you simply help it along a little bit. And sometimes they'll even pay the production company to do it for them, because they were about to have to pay somebody else to take it down.
Wow.
That's the ideal. But of course, once you start the fire, it goes to completion. And so there's no, hang on, wait, this camera wasn't set right. Oh, the actor messed his line up. You know, there's no going back. So it's inexpensive, but it's not always the best way, because sometimes you may need a house to be on fire for 2 or 3 weeks in order to get all the shots that you anticipated.
Well, how on earth do they do that? They just keep, like, building a fake wall and then burning it up?
We built the entire building from scratch out of non-flammable materials. And then the fire itself is actually coming from propane that we pipe into the building. And so we can have a building fully engaged, and then they call lunch, and we just throw a valve, the fire goes out, we go eat, we come back, we open the valve, we turn it back on, and we're back in fire.
Oh my, so you don't have to rebuild the wall. I mean, the structure stays up, basically.
The structure stays up.
And for effects, someone will probably just throw like a lumber beam at the camera, so it looks like, you know, some
right.
beam is crashing.
We'll drop a beam, and if things are supposed to drop, they're usually rigged with solenoid valves and electromagnets, so they drop exactly when they're supposed to drop. They may be hinged so that when they drop, they fall in a certain direction. And really, this is really all about safely using science to create the illusion of danger, not ever actually having real danger.
Well, one hopes. Well, although, and like if you're throwing somebody off a building, is it just, okay, make sure there's a mattress 2 feet below, or is there more to it? Is it choreographed like a ballet dance or something?
Well, Tempur-Pedic, preferably.
Oh, of course.
But,
yeah.
Memory
foam would not
do
it.
You sleep number before you jump off the plane.
I prefer the memory foam kind of landings, but no, seriously, I mean, it's like, is there more to it than just making sure there's a mattress?
Yes, there is. We do calculations. We break out our little Casio calculators, and we figure out how high we are and much we weigh, and that tells us the speed that we'll be going when we hit. It tells us how long it will take us till we get to the ground, and how much energy we're going to be delivering to the ground. And then based on that, we select an appropriately sized airbag. An airbag is a, you know, like a giant bag the size of a small house that's full of air, because air is a gas, and gases are compressible. When you land on it, it's like landing on a giant marshmallow.
Oh.
All of the energy of the fall is, you know, is dissipated in squeezing air molecules together and then out of the bag, and you get decelerated at a rate that's below the rate at which people break.
What? That is just so cool. I mean, I kind of get what you're saying. I was never a science head, I have to say that. I mean, I took physics in high school, and the only reason I passed was because the instructor curved a little bit, and then I took it again in college thinking it would be easier just because I already kind of took it in high school, and I wound up with a C. So I get it, but I don't really get it. But you were getting it, Steve Wolfe.
David, I honestly wasn't getting it either. You know, I loved science until first grade. At home, I like to, you know, take things apart, and I still do that with my kids. Anytime we have a broken appliance, out come the screwdrivers, and we're ripping into it to see how it works. But once I got to school, science became a lot more boring. It was no more experiments and a lot of handout worksheets, no more explanations because the teachers didn't know what they were talking about. And they would grade you based on whether you had the margins right, or rather than the content. So I was really...
That sounds like my recent thesis, but I wasn't even joking about that. No, I just finished a thesis here, and literally the past 2 months of it were about the tabs, the margins, when you're bolding, when you're underlining, and, you know...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that was kind of nuts.
If Albert had written, you know, E equals MC squared, and he had used the wrong case C, you know, they would have thrown it out.
Right. I mean, really, that's true.
They would have told him, oh, you know what, this was supposed to be 500 words. You fail, you know, without even looking at the content. So school and science and I just weren't a good combination. But when I got out of school and began working, you know, in the stunt field, then I was able to reinvigorate my love of science and actually to go back and study it on my own so that I really did understand the physics and the chemistry, because I had a reason to want to learn it. And when I go into schools now, I show kids movie stunts and special effects as a way to get them excited so that they have a reason to want to learn it.
Well, what effects do you show kids when you go around the country with, you know, kind of like a one-man show almost, and you're explaining what you're doing?
It's called Science in the Movies. Mm-hmm. We've got a great website at scienceinthemovies.com. We go into school and we do an hour-long presentation. First, we fill the room with smoke using just 3 drops of liquid, and people can't believe, how is it that 3 drops of liquid, when you turn them into a gas, fill a whole room? But it does, and until you see it, you wouldn't believe it.
Oh, no, I believe it, because, you know, when I drink beer, there's gas filling the room in about 10 minutes. But,
right, from just 12 ounces of beer.
Yeah, it's a wrong kind of gas.
Then,
it's not something
then
you
would need. Then I've got a little stainless steel dollhouse, light that on fire with propane to show that, you know, the house isn't really burning, it's really the gas burning. And the house is nice and shiny when we start, and then it's got black stuff on it, and where did that come from, and how does that chemical reaction work? Then we lift a teacher up to the ceiling using pulleys.
Whoa.
Second grade girl can hold up the football coach with one hand using the mechanical advantage provided by pulleys. And again, if it's just drawn on the blackboard, you don't get it, but when you see it in front of you, it's pretty darn exciting.
I mean, I'm 48 years old, and I would be excited to be in that classroom watching the stuff that you're doing. But you don't do it that much for actual movies anymore. You do it a little.
I do 3 or 4 movies a year. I do some commercials. I do some reality TV. But one thing I noticed working on movies, that with all due respect, most movies are pretty stupid. You watch them, they may, if they're a good movie, entertain you for a little while, but then you go home and you forget what it was, and it just, most movies really don't engage you for very long, and there's no real takeaway. You're not somehow improved by the experience in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt bad about giving my life up to work on stories that I often felt the number of movies themselves. I say for every movie that's out there, you know, there's five shows about how this was done. So people really are fascinated with the technology that goes on behind the scenes. And that's what I decided to capitalize on as a way to get kids interested in science.
But have you thought of maybe directing your own film or writing and...
Yeah, I'm working on my own show. It's a show called Team FX, and it's a behind-the-scenes with a movie special effects team, and really sharing the science of how it's done, because we really... Well, the kids are fascinated with it, and I want to encourage them to learn more science, because as you know, you're what, vintage 63?
64, just on the cusp. I just had my birthday 5 days ago. 4 days ago.
So when you were 5 years old, you may have seen a man walk on the moon.
Yeah.
I was five when I saw a man walk on the moon, and I thought, this is the most amazing thing. Science can do anything, and what an amazing thing that we live in the country that did this. And then 20 years ago, I saw Tom Brokaw on the news talking about how America was no longer even in the top 20 in science education. And in 20 years, we haven't made a lot of progress.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And it really hit me for some reason that, you know, that this country that was on such an amazing trajectory science-wise was really now floundering in, you know, in the third world of science education.
Well, we just need to let in more Asian immigrants, and then we'll be right back on top again. That's all we need.
Well, that's what we are doing, but what is it that they're doing in Asia, education-wise, that's allowing these kids to be so successful? Or what is it that they're doing in Finland, which now outscored all the other countries in science education, where they put no emphasis on testing? They say, hey, why don't we just worry about teaching kids the content, and then the test will take care of itself.
Interesting.
But here,
here.
No Child Left Behind is really created an environment where no child gets ahead. And teachers are just teaching through the test, not putting things in context, and of course the kids aren't getting it.
Now, can I ask one thing, though, about, since your livelihood now is mostly, I mean, well, actually you're doing enough movies a year that it's still kind of your livelihood, but you're also doing the teaching, but is there a worry in your field that, because everything now is animated so easily, that the special effects field will die down just because it's easier to draw fire digitally than make one?
Well, it's not really easier to draw fire digitally. Fire is really complex. Smoke is very complex. The computers and the animators are pretty expensive, and the rendering process is slow. So there's certainly places where it is easier to do something by animation or to combine animation with real action. But if we wanted to film an explosion, or you know, to create an explosion on screen, it would take animators several weeks to create the explosion, to put in all of the little details and nuances of flame and smoke and currents and eddy currents and interactions. And then if they don't like it, you know, they've got to tweak the program and re-render the whole thing. Whereas between 9 a.m. and noon, I could probably fire off 20 fireballs, and the director could take their pick of which one they want.
Wow. And how much?
That's cheaper, and it's 100% realistic.
And how long would it have taken you to get the materials and all the stuff and set up everything to get those fireballs? I mean, it's not your... You would be showing up at 3 in the morning to get it ready by 9, or days before.
I'd probably be showing up at 8:30.
Oh, come on. 8:30 to start at 9?
It doesn't. The more times you do something, the quicker you can be ready to do it.
I guess. I mean, I
guess you probably used to start your show prep 5 hours before showtime, and now, you know, you review your notes in 10 minutes, and you're ready to go.
Yeah, but my show sounds like it. No, but it's true. It's true.
You know, I know exactly what materials we need to pull together. I know where we store them, and I have a really great crew. And I tell them, you know, bring out all the stuff to do 20 fireballs, and maybe in 15 minutes they can assemble all the materials from our magazine.
Wow.
Because we keep this stuff on hand. And off we go.
And by the way, people might be curious to know that you don't live in Hollywood, California. You don't live in New York City. Your work is generally done where you live in Austin, Texas. Is there a lot of shooting down there?
There's quite a bit of shooting. Austin's making 5 or 6 films a year. There's two projects coming in right now that I'm working on. There's great crew available here. Hmm. People are friendly here. You don't have to spend 3 hours in traffic to drive 2 miles.
And are you like the only game in town? So if a movie is shooting in Austin, you basically get the call if there's a special effect involved?
There's another guy in town, but he's usually out of town.
Oh, he's in California. You're right.
We get most of the work that comes through town.
Cool. By the way, we're talking...
We do a lot of live work. We've taken movie special effects and made them available to a new market, and that is event planners.
Hmm.
If an event planner is putting on a Christmas party, or she could call me up and say, hey, could you make this into Winter Wonderland? And we could bring snow. We could bring frost. We could bring sleet. Kids could be sliding down slopes, just like in the movies. Or she might be putting on a wedding, and she says, wouldn't this be amazing if the wedding had fireworks? And we put on the fireworks. So we've made all of the stunts and special effects that are normally available only to a TV producer or a film producer, and we've made all those resources now available to event coordinators.
How many people do you have in your crew?
We range anywhere between 6 and 25, depending on how busy things are.
Okay, so yeah, that's one reason you can get everything put together in half an hour or something like that, because you've got 25 people who know exactly what they're doing it immediately. So that helps. It's not just you and like
it gets done faster when it's just 2 or 3 people, and they're not tripping all over each other.
Huh. Okay. Wow. By the way, we're talking with Steve Wolf, the author of Secret Science Behind Movie Stunts and Special Effects. He's also the man behind scienceinthemovies.com, and that's a place to go if people who are listening are teachers somewhere and they're looking to bring what you do to their school. Is that the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, if they hit scienceinthemovies.com, all the information about our school show is there. And, you know, if you've got kids who are interested in science and you want to give them material that's easy to read and engaging, a great science book, guess where you go, Dave? GreatScienceBook.com.
Really? GreatScienceBook.com. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. By Steve Wolf. And by the way, Wolf is W-O-L-F, just in case people were looking for any special effects behind his last name. No, it's a simple animalistic spelling of it. Just like the animal. Now,
what are the movies that have come out that have impressed you this year?
You know, I'm not good with that because I don't go to the movies much. I see movies when they come out on DVD, or I rent them from my local library many years after they've been out. And plus, I watch a lot of old movies and foreign films. So, I guess I'm with you. I can't really think of one. I don't resent big Hollywood blockbusters, but I just don't see a lot of them, you know?
I thought the new Mission Impossible was really fun.
As a movie? Or can you watch the new Mission Impossible as just an enjoyable film? Or are you always going, oh, I know how they did that. Oh, they could have done that better. Oh, I see the CGI.
Well, I don't have to worry about how they did that. I can just enjoy it now because my kids are the ones going, oh, I know how they did that. My 6-year-old, oh, I saw the cable on that one, Dad. They missed getting that one out.
Well, that's cool. That's great. I mean, because people ask me all the time. I've been a theater critic for like 25 years. And they say, well, how do you go to the theater and actually enjoy it? You're probably just deconstructing everything. You're pulling apart the text and you're looking at the actor or how they're physically moving at a certain moment. And I'm like, no, I go to the theater. I want to have a great time. I want to be laughing or moved. And the intellectual stuff kind of comes later, you know? But that's just me.
When you digest it later.
Oh, yeah.
And because if you can't go there and enjoy it, then you know what you're really reviewing is what your experience of the movie was, not so much reviewing your thoughts about how the movie was made.
Right, exactly. I mean, although I can see, like, actors who are really in the business and living and breathing acting, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, going to a movie and then not really concentrating on anything else but, like, the performance, because they've just been in class all day taking acting lessons. So I also see the other side of that, but at least you can break away from it in special effects movies and just dig the movie of what it's trying to be.
Well, in many cases, the special effects are the movie.
Well, sure.
They forgot to bring a writer.
Well, yeah, yes.
This blows up, that blows up, this car flips over, he chases so-and-so, so-and-so shoots somebody. It's like, well, where's the plot? And so I envy you in watching old movies because they were based on good stories and good acting. And then if they had special effects, it was to enhance the plot rather than to be the plot.
Now, let me ask, one of the things you say really early in your book is this kind of very cute story about your neighbor back when you were 4 or 5 years old, Ali Sheedy. Since we're talking Hollywood and Oscars and movies, what's your Ali Sheedy story?
Ali Sheedy was my next-door neighbor growing up in Manhattan, a small island off the Jersey Shore.
I've heard of it, yeah.
And she knew how much I loved science. When on my 5th birthday, she brought me, she got me a big battery and a spool of wire. And she knew that I would be building circuits and making little alarms to let me know when my brothers touched my toys and stuff like that.
That's nice. That's
fun. And I have, you know, quite a lovely career in filmmaking.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's gone more to indie stuff recently, and she had her troubles, but I hope she's fine, I'm sure. Are you in touch?
I haven't been in touch with her in several years.
Oh, okay.
I'd love to be.
Yeah.
Kelly, if you're listening.
Oh, yeah, she's a regular listener. Yeah.
Find me on Facebook, right?
There you go. Again, just talking, I guess, name-dropping and stuff, are there any Hollywood famous people that you're palsy with, friends with, or are you kind of always on the other side of things?
I'm usually on the other side of things, and quite intentionally, because the people who you don't talk to, you'll never get in an argument with. And,
oh.
and you never know what someone's sense of humor is or isn't, what their politics are, and...
Well, if they're a Hollywood actor, they're liberal, but other than that...
Right. So I have a lot of money on the line when I'm on set, and so I try to keep my eye on what's important, and that's to do my job well and not be controversial and get my money and go home and spend time with my kids. So the less I interact with people who, you know, aren't necessary for my interaction, the more likely everything goes smoothly and I go home and get on to the next project.
Wow, that's really, really...
And that's a really important thing. You know, when I bring interns on set, this is one of the very early things that we cover, is stay with your own department. Don't talk to anybody except your co-workers in our department and your department head. Don't go off and help the lighting guys carrying the lighting, and don't get, you know, involved in the makeup. And there's a lot of distractible situations there. If you simply do a good job at the thing that you're there to do, everyone will be perfectly satisfied with your efforts.
Hmm.
But you help the lighting guy carry the lights up the stairs, then, you know, as soon as that light turns up not working for some reason, they're just like, oh, that guy in the effects department was the last guy to touch it.
Uh-huh.
why bring that trouble on yourself?
Good point. Can I ask...
And you know what? Usually the things that we're there to do are, you know, are technically difficult. And so you should be paying attention to what you're doing.
Oh, sure.
And that is something that I really learned very well from watching Tom Cruise work. We did a movie called The Firm together back in the early 90s. And he had such an amazing dedication to his craft. He never did not know his lines. You know, he always showed up ready to work, completely prepared, and expected the same of the people that he was working with.
Although actually one of the things they mentioned in, since we were talking about that recent Mission Impossible, is praising him for the fact that it seemed that he was doing some of his own stunt work. What are your thoughts on actors who want to kind of do their own stunts?
I think it's a pretty bad idea.
Okay.
Well, it's about as good an idea as the stunt people deciding that they want to play the character that they're doubling.
Hmm.
So we don't have the stunt people act, and we shouldn't have the actors do stunts. And it, just for the simple production cost safety factor, if an actor's doing his own stunts and he sprains his ankle and now he can't, you know, work for 3 weeks because he's on crutches, that really is an expensive problem for the production company. Whereas if a stunt person sprains his ankle, you get another stunt guy in there.
That's kind of cruel, in a way. I mean, it's the truth. It's the honest to God's truth. But, you know, the value we place on different people is kind of funny.
But there's an expectation that the stunt people, you know, have athletic ability and that they know how to do the physical actions that are required. There's not such an expectation that the actors can. Now, in Tom Cruise's case, he really doesn't undertake anything unprepared. So the physical training that was necessary to do the stunts that he did, he received. He took sure. all the training. He spent time climbing the building on his own. He was climbing 5 or 6 hours a day plus, you know, in order to be able to do what that part required. And he trained for it the same as any stunt guy would have.
Cool.
Maybe more, because he knew that, you know, that he didn't have a background in it. Going to have to study hard and work hard to be ready.
Well, that's.
So I really admire that.
Yeah.
When you see somebody who really puts their all into what they're working on, and brings 100% of their game to the project.
Well, I want to thank Steve Wolfe for bringing his 100% game to the neighborhood on this Saturday morning. I want to remind people that to find out more about what Steve Wolfe does and perhaps bring him to your school or to your event planning sort of thing. I didn't really know how to put that. But his website is scienceinthemovies.com. And what was the other? Was
Great Science Book.
GreatScienceBook.com. He's also the author of The Secret Science Behind Movie Stunts and Special Effects from Saddleback Books. My other one little really side question to Steve Wolfe is, and I'm hoping you'll say yes on this, but the chances are 1,000,000 to 1. But I used to watch on public television, there was a show, it was a 15-minute instructional show that was kind of, I guess, coordinated along with science or high school courses in physics. And it was called Adventures in Physics, and it was hosted by a science teacher, a physics teacher, named Dr. Julius Sumner Miller. Does that name ring any bells? Does this program ring any bells to you?
Does the name Pavlov ring a bell?
Well, yes. I've never met the man, but I drool when you say his name. Why?
That was a science joke.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, Pavlov did all the experiments with the dogs where he rang bells.
Uh-huh.
Got the dogs to
sound. Now I get the ringing of the bell. I was thinking more in the drool.
No, but I don't know Dr. Julius.
Ah, okay. Well, he's
I only knew the Dr. Julius Irving.
Well, there's a science to basketball, too. But here's my recommendation to you. I'm sending everybody to your website. Let me send you, I'm sure there's stuff on YouTube and some other videos out there. Look for Julius Sumner Miller and a program called Adventures in Physics, or Adventures with Physics. They're hilarious, they're wonderful, and he's doing a lot of what you're doing in a much smaller sort of high school-y scale with little bitty experiments and, you know, explaining the physics of how things work by showing what they do. And he's also such an eccentric kind of kooky character.
Yes, I believe that he went to the same hairstylist as Don King.
Now, wait a minute. So you do know who he is?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you had no idea.
I'm on his website. I'm cheating.
Oh, fair. Check him out. Check out some of the shows he did. It's really pretty fantastic. And
okay.
You know, so just an FYI, maybe your kids would really like it too.
No, I bet they would.
So, Steve Wolfe, it's been an absolute pleasure. As soon as this conversation is over, I'm going to jump over the table and take a rolling fall out my window and see how that goes. I'm going to measure.
Let me know how that works.
I'll call you from the hospital. But it's been an absolute joy.
I'll send flowers.
Thanks. Steve Wolfe.
Thank you so much, Abe.
Been a great pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.